This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The Immigration Nation.
The Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. This could be a landmark day for this country. Many businesses will be closed or boycotted as part of a nationwide show of force by illegal immigrants and their supporters. There will be rallies and vigils, school walkouts, and human chains. People are protesting a House bill that would criminalize undocumented workers. Their message? Illegal immigrants make a difference. Marketplace's Tess Viglin tells us how industries are dealing with all this.
The National Restaurant Association says it encouraged its members before today to talk with workers and find out their plans. The lobbying group says it expects some eateries will have to shut down for the day. Others will get by with whatever staff they do have. Barry Chiswick teaches at the University of Illinois at Chicago and is author of The Economics of Immigration. He says the temporary pain of mass absences is just that, temporary.
One day's closing of operations for a relatively small number of establishments is not going to have any significant effect on the economy.
According to the outplacement firm Challenger Grain Christmas, the construction industry is the largest employer of undocumented workers and could feel the day-long pinch in selected cities. Three large meatpacking companies, Cargill, Tyson, and Seaboard, decided to close plants today on the assumption that large parts of the workforce won't show. I'm Tess Viglund for Marketplace.
Despite all the protesting today, Congress will keep plugging away at the immigration bills and other issues. First up on the Senate's agenda, money for the war in Iraq and for Hurricane Katrina rebuilding. The White House wants the cash pronto, and the bill's on a fast track. Well, it was. Now it's moving slower than Porky Pig. John Dimsdale reports.
The Senate has tacked on some $14 billion to the president's original $92 billion request. The additions include extra money for mine safety inspections, railroad rebuilding in Mississippi, and $4 billion in disaster assistance for agriculture.
It's for everything you could possibly imagine.
Steve Ellis with Taxpayers for Common Sense says eligibility for the emergency farm assistance is nationwide.
Whether you're a fruit or nut grower, livestock producer, tree farmer, they all are getting money in this program.
Fiscal conservatives have amendments to trim some of the spending. Last week, they successfully stripped a $15 million fish marketing program by criticizing it as pork masquerading as seafood. This week, Senate leaders may try to tack on a taxpayer rebate funded by rescinding subsidies for the oil industry. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Folks in one Texas county have had just about enough of the oil industry's profits. The board of Bee County voted to boycott ExxonMobil starting today. They want people to stay away from Exxon gas stations until the price of gas drops to $1.30 a gallon. Right now in Beeville and other towns close by, gas is going for $2.80. Beeville has 13,000 people, and a local poll found 72% of them plan to participate in this. Oil prices are back above $72 a barrel today. Meanwhile, Wall Street looks to rebound. The end of last week was a downer. The Dow lost 15 points, and the NASDAQ fell 22 to 23.22. This is Marketplace. 25 years ago today, the first frequent flyer program was introduced, but it might not be such a happy birthday for us flyers. Rachel Dornhelm explains.
The frequent flyer concept took off fast. There are now frequent customer incentive cards in cafes and tanning salons. But 25 years later, the original inspiration isn't doing so well. Airline analyst George Novak says after reorganizations and streamlined flight schedules, air travelers find few chances to redeem miles. Even big-time flyers are getting annoyed.
That's something that the airlines certainly have to worry about, because those business people who are flying hundreds of thousands of miles a year on a carrier, if they become frustrated, then the airlines are really in trouble.
Novak says airlines have never planned well for award travel, but he expects changes in the next year or two because of consumer pressure. This month, United announced more miles are needed for some awards, but more seats will be available. I'm Rachel Dornhelm for Marketplace.
Which is produced and distributed by American Public Media.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. By the American Public Transportation Association, committed to making America energy independent through increased use of public transportation. On the web at publictransportation.org. And by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, helping nearly 3 million members achieve financial security and give back to their communities and congregations. Thrivent.com.
This is Marketplace. I'm Scott Jagow. There is no hope for liberals if they seek only to imitate conservatives. Now, that's not my quote. That's from renowned economist John Kenneth Galbraith. He died over the weekend at the age of 97. Galbraith was one of the architects of Roosevelt's New Deal and something of a celebrity in his time. Matthew Algio tells us more about his life.
After he graduated from Ontario Agricultural College in 1931, John Kenneth Galbraith faced a choice: return to the family farm or accept a scholarship from Berkeley. "Very few decisions have I made with such ease," he later wrote. After getting his PhD at Berkeley, he went on to teach at Harvard, where his economic philosophy was formed.
Galbraith believed that the explanation of economic reality required a point of view.
And that point of view, says Galbraith biographer Richard Parker, was liberal.
He believed that government had a central role in the management of the overall economic performance of a country, and that in times of recession, the government should step in with large-scale deficit spending.
Galbraith helped shape the New Deal as an economist in the Roosevelt administration. During the Second World War, he was the nation's price czar, in charge of setting prices on everything from butter to steel. He was also JFK's ambassador to India and a passionate critic of the war in Vietnam. By the late 1960s, Galbraith had become the most famous economist in the world, and many of his colleagues resented his celebrity.
Here was a man who was dining with Jacqueline Onassis and being invited to the black and white ball organized by Andy Warhol. This is not the life that the average American economist leads.
Galbraith wrote some 20 books, including influential bestsellers like The Affluent Society and American Capitalism. Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph Stiglitz says Galbraith's influence on his profession is undeniable.
Too often, economists talk mostly to other economists. Galbraith was one of the few people who believed it's important to reach out beyond your small circles.
Galbraith also wrote two novels. In a 1986 interview on the UC Berkeley TV program Conversations with History, Galbraith said he especially enjoyed writing fiction.
You can make a point in a novel, you have the availability of truth in fiction that you do not have in the real world.
By the 1980s, Galbraith's views had become unfashionable, swept aside by conservative theories like supply-side economics. But biographer Richard Parker says Galbraith never wavered in his liberal beliefs.
I think he believed throughout his life that a generous combination of markets and government was far better than trying to imagine a world in which markets defined all.
John Kenneth Galbraith never stopped writing. His last book was published in 2004. I'm Matthew Algio for Marketplace.
In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in, and have a great day.
American Public Media.
Many immigrants think not just about what...
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.